It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Tony Evers does not quite have a majority of support from voters in Wisconsin, but the Democratic gubernatorial candidate is favored by 49% of likely voters in the latest Marquette University Law School poll. Scott Walker garners 44% support. In August, Evers and Walker were tied at around 46%. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin has similarly extended her lead against Republican Leah Vukmir. According to the Marquette poll, Vukmir is supported by 42% of voters. Baldwin has 53% of support. Are you a woman? Do you always vote, or is something about the political climate pushing you to the polls? We want to hear from you because this poll says you are driving the support here. 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. I am sitting here this morning with Charles Franklin. He is, of course, the guru of the Marquette University poll. His official title is director of the Marquette University Law School poll, and he's a professor of law and public policy at Marquette. Welcome to the program, sir.
Good to be here. Good morning.
So talk to me about how many people, just the nuts and bolts here, how many people were polled? When did this happen? What was the margin of error here?
So we were in the field doing the poll last Wednesday through Sunday, the 12th through the 16th. We interviewed 800 registered voters by telephone, both landline and cell phone. About 60% of the respondents are cell phone, 40% landline. Of that 800 people, 614 are likely voters, people who tell us they're absolutely certain they're going to vote. And when we're looking at the horse race matchups and we're looking at the characteristics of the candidates, we're talking about likely voters. When we talk about public opinion, like approval of the governor or opinion on policy issues, we talk about the full 800 registered voters in the sample. And there's a margin of error of about 4.4% on the likely voters.
So one of these things about statistics and polling that has always fascinated me is that you can get a really good idea of what tens of thousands of people think by sampling 800 people. Yeah. Explain that a little bit to me without going into a class on statistics.
Well the best version I like is you go to the doctor and they say, I need a blood sample. That doesn't mean they have to drain pints and pints of your blood. Mm-hmm. A little bit tells you about the whole. Or if you like the slightly less gruesome example, if you're trying to decide if the soup is seasoned right, you add some seasoning, but you also then stir the soup. You don't just put some pepper on top and taste it with the pepper.
Right.
You stir it around. The stirring around is like random sampling. We make sure that every phone number in the state, whether it's a landline or a cell phone, has the same chance of being called by our poll. And it's that's the equivalent of stirring the soup, so that when you do take a sample from that, you're getting a good mix, if you will, of the whole pot of soup, and you don't have to drink the whole thing.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Let's dig into this governor's race here. Walker and Evers, among likely voters or people who say that they're certain to vote, support for Evers went up to 49%, went down for Scott Walker to 44%. What are you taking away from this here?
Yeah, back in August, we had a 46-46 tie on the race. And actually, if you go back to June, it was Walker ahead by 2 points.
Right.
So among likely voters. So if you look at that trend, it's from Walker by 2 to a tie to now Evers by 5 points, the 49-44 split. Libertarian candidate Phil Anderson gets 6% both last month and this month. So there's a bit of movement there, and a 5-point swing in the margin is a fairly big swing in 1 month. It's also the biggest margin an opponent of Scott Walker's has had in our polling that goes back to the recall election. The Marquette poll didn't start until 2012, so we don't have any data about 2010.
So that's really interesting to me. What I find kind of fascinating about the governor's race is that we were polling in June against Scott Walker or some sort of Democrat that we kind of figured would be Tony Evers because he was in the lead. And then the last poll came out just after the election, right? So there's been a month for this kind of to settle in. And during this month, Scott Walker has been running a lot of negative ads against Tony Evers, and they haven't seemed to have worked.
Well, I think that is really an important point in two ways. One is we deliberately went and polled the week of the primary. So the primary was Tuesday. We started polling Wednesday because we wanted to get a baseline before the campaign had wrapped up. This September survey is the first to cover the impacts of the advertising, what issues the candidates are raising, and how they're debating them. And we see this movement in Evers' direction. Now, almost all of that movement is because of independents. Because 93% of Republicans are backing Walker, 94% of Democrats are backing Evers. I don't imagine that either of those numbers is likely to change much between now and November. But what has changed is independents who were leaning in the direction of Evers back in August are now 20 points more in favor of Evers than they are for Walker. Now, I want to hasten to add that a 20-point lead is very large. It may not hold up that large. And independents, by definition, are more volatile than partisans. So you should look at this as the familiar snapshot in time for a poll rather than a prediction of where we'll be in November.
We are talking to Marquette University Law School pollster Charles Franklin, and we want to hear from you. What do you think of the results of this poll? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. One of the things that I was interested in with this governor poll, though, is that there aren't many people who are undecided.
That's right, and in two ways. First of all the results we're telling you, or that I'm telling you, include a follow-up that says, well, who do you lean to if you're not decided? So in that sense, we're pushing it down. Mm-hmm. But even before we ask who do you lean to, only about 5% say that they're undecided in the governor's race at the beginning. You've got a governor running for a third term. He's got strong supporters and very strong opponents for any governor, actually. And so this is a case where you would expect the governor's race to be moving only within fairly narrow bounds, as opposed to the Senate race where the divisions are not quite so strong.
We've got Leslie from Cottage Grove who wants to talk about the governor's race. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning to your guest as well. Thank you for the results. I am leaning independent, but I think as a recovering Republican, I'm going to take a chance and vote for Tony Evers. And I think what sealed it for me were these commercials using the lieutenant governor to lie to us basically about pre-existing conditions and this administration's support for them. We know that they will not take that lawsuit that Brad Schimmel is using with the other attorney generals to basically nullify Obamacare. And to me, that's a death sentence for people that don't have the kind of access that Becky Clayfish had. She was married to a state legislator when she developed cancer, and because of that, she got the Cadillac treatment at Frederick Hospital. And I believe that what is good for our elected officials is good for the taxpayers of our state. And so for that reason, I don't appreciate a woman getting up on TV and lying directly to our faces.
Leslie, thank you very much for that. Charles, she said a phrase that I want to get back to when we come back, which is a recovering Republican. I want to know what you're finding in your polling. We are talking to Charles Franklin about the Marquette University Law School poll, which came out yesterday and shows Democrats sort of taking the lead here, with one exception, which we will also talk about. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thank you. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. If the Marquette University Law School poll holds true, Wisconsin will see a blue wave in major elections for governor and Senate. But races just below that, like attorney general, don't quite have that momentum. Are you surprised that women, especially college-educated white women, are driving support for Democrats, while non-college-educated white men are driving support for Republicans? Are you an independent, like we just heard from? Do you tend to vote for people in one party, or are you switching between the major labels? What has changed your mind? We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org or tweet us with @WPR Mornings. Charles Franklin, you are the director of the Marquette University Law School poll. And this is the thing that stuck out for me when I was looking at the numbers yesterday. First of all, thank you for that wonderful layout. So it's really easy to see these numbers. Okay. Second of all, more college-educated white women are driving this. 63% of college-educated white women favor Evers.
That's right. And one of the things that has been growing over time and was especially apparent in 2016 is this gap that's the combination among whites of education and gender. So that at one poll we have non-college white males, and then at the other extreme, college-educated white females, and the non-college women and the college men are in between. And so this time we broke those out, and the big gap is very apparent in both the Senate and the governor's race, but a gap between 40% support for Evers among non-college men and 62% about among college women is really quite a large range. I mean, a 20-point movement in between those. And this has only gotten bigger with time. The impact of education on vote choice and partisanship has been growing, but the gap between men and women has been growing as well. And it's two-sided. Sometimes people talk about the gender gap and think of it only as a matter of women moving, but it's really the men who are also moving and creating that gap.
That's really interesting. But in 2016, white women did not vote for Hillary Clinton as a majority. That's changed, you're seeing, not necessarily for Clinton, but...
No, but that's the gap also between college-educated white women and non-college white women. Those are different economic experiences, different family experiences, and they lead to different political reactions most of the time. So women are not homogeneous, this gap by education, and all the things that come with education are a factor in this.
We are talking to Charles Franklin about the Marquette University Law School poll, which was released yesterday. It shows Scott Walker trailing Tony Evers. It also shows Leah Vukmir trailing Tammy Baldwin by a lot. I want to talk about this Senate campaign here. In August, you showed 49% of likely voters would support Tammy Baldwin, 47% would support Leah Vukmir. And this was just after the election, and we knew that Vukmir was the candidate. Now the number is 53-42. Does that surprise you?
That's a big move. Now, that race has been a little interesting because with registered voters, Baldwin had been holding between a 9 and an 11-point lead with over Vukmir. But when we narrowed it in August to just the likely voters, the most enthusiastic about voting, that's when it tightened to just 2 points among likely voters. But August was also the time that Republicans told us they were more excited about voting than Democrats for the first time this year. So that may play a role. It also goes to the role of, again, independents who are strongly favoring Baldwin. The one thing there is Vukmir has not fully consolidated Republican support. And so whereas Walker's getting 93% of Republicans, with Vukmir it's more like 80%. And so she's still got a ways to go to fully consolidate that partisan support.
And that can maybe bring her numbers up.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in she's the Republican candidate. So what is holding people back from supporting her?
Well, part of it is name recognition, though this also applies to Tony Evers. Over a third of voters, or about a third of voters, say that they don't have enough information to have an opinion of Leah Vuittmeier, despite having won the primary. She's not a household name. For that matter, Evers is at 31% that can't recognize his name or have an opinion about him. So it's when we present you with, you know, how are you going to vote in the Senate between Republican Leah Vuittmeier and Democrat Tammy Baldwin? That may be most of the information people have about Vuittmeier at this moment. As the campaign goes on, they'll learn more about her. They'll learn more about the differences between the two candidates. And I don't think there's a Senate race in the country that has two Senate candidates who are as far apart on issues and ideology as these two.
True. They're very true. We are taking calls about the Marquette University Law School poll. 800-642-1234. Patrick from Madison, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have trouble believing polls anymore. I believe that this poll had Hillary Clinton leading in the state before the presidential election, and we all know what happened there. So have you done anything to tweak the way that you take polls, the way that you read numbers? Why should I believe these numbers is my question.
And here's my question here to follow up on that is did it really have to do with the poll itself or the fact that people who you thought were likely voters just simply didn't vote?
No, and it's a perfectly good question. Yeah, we had Clinton ahead by six before the almost a week, a little over a week before the election. Trump won the state by 0.75 points. So that was a big miss for us. But there were also 33 other polls in the state, and not one of us ever had Trump ahead. And that's important because it suggests that all the differences in methodology, how we call, how we frame the question, and other things, none of that made a difference in the sense that we were all wrong. Now, one reaction is understandable, as Patrick suggests. Why should I believe any of the polls in that circumstance? And then, fair enough. But it also shows that it's not just one little methodological tweak or that I did something wrong, but everybody else got it right. It means we were all off. So why is that? I think the most reasonable answer here is that there really was a change in the last week of polling after we had stopped polling that moved strongly to Donald Trump with last-minute deciders. We see that in the exit polls that show us that people who decided in the last week of the campaign broke more than 2-1 for Trump. Normally, late deciders break about evenly. Now, why that change took place in the last week is open to debate. Was it the Comey letter? Was it reluctant Republicans that didn't care for Trump but really couldn't stand Hillary Clinton that made the difference? The one thing I can say is our turnout estimates were very close. We were within a point of the actual turnout across six different regions of the state. Our worst miss actually was 1.5% in one region. But where we were badly wrong was underestimating the Trump vote in the Milwaukee suburbs and to a lesser extent going up to Green Bay. Those are areas where the Trump actual vote was below the Romney vote. He underperformed in that area, but he did much better than our respondents told us he was going to do, and that's where we got it so wrong. We have made some changes, but not wholesale changes.
Okay, so how do you make sure that you've got that wrong and that things don't break in the last week of this election?
Well, I'm just going to make sure that no news comes out in the last week of the campaign this year.
You're going to call the FBI.
That's right.
Make sure the FBI director doesn't say anything untoward.
The answer is there is no way a pollster can do anything to change the course of events after the last poll is taken. But maybe the thing that we can all take away is the humility to say that whatever that last poll is a week before the election still leaves the opportunity for change to take place. And as I close that last presentation every time, I remind people that polls do not vote.
Right.
People do. And if you're voting on the basis of one of our polls, that's just crazy. Go out and support the candidate you like. don't listen to what the poll says to drive your vote one way or another. And ultimately, I'm perfectly happy that it's in the hands of the public to do as they wish.
We are taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. We have a call from Matt from Mesquita. He says that he'll vote, but he's continually disappointed that Libertarian and third-party candidates never make it above 10%, and people seem to be okay breaking with red or blue teams. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there is certainly a dissatisfaction with both parties. The sort of the consequence of our extreme party polarization, which is by almost every measure greater now and in the last 5 or 10 years compared to where it was in the 90s or the 80s or before, is that if you're not on a partisan team, you're more likely to be a bit alienated from both of those parties. And as they've moved to more strongly liberal or strongly conservative positions, moderates feel a bit left out of that as well, or libertarians who are in a slightly different direction. But our electoral system only rewards winners, and finishing second or finishing third is not helpful. And so for that reason, we put real burdens on third parties to emerge.
As we wouldn't in a parliamentary system, which is a whole other show. We are talking to Charles Franklin, who is the director of the Marquette University Law School poll. Poll came out yesterday and showed Tony Evers and Tammy Baldwin to have pretty commanding leads, but the attorney general's race is different. We're going to talk about that in a moment. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We have been talking today about the new Marquette University Law School poll. It focuses on the big races. The poll shows that Democrats Tony Evers and Tammy Baldwin have expanded their leads, and that Republican Attorney General Brad Schimmel has more support in his race. But the Marquette poll measures more than just political races. It also asks about issues. We're going to dig into those in a moment with Marquette poll director Charles Franklin. What are the issues that you are most passionate about heading into the elections? How will it affect the way you vote? Are you passionate about roads, education, tariffs, Foxconn? 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Charles, I want to talk about this attorney general race. For the first time this year, you've done polling on this, and you found that Brad Schimmel has an advantage over his opponent, Josh Call. Why is this?
Yeah, it's a 48-41 advantage for Schimmel, a 7-point lead. And I actually think it's worth pointing out that in our sample, we have this race with a 7-point Republican lead, the governor with a 5-point Democratic, and Baldwin, the Senate race, with an 11-point range. These are the same respondents answering these questions. So it shows that each race has its own individual character to it. It's not just completely dominated by straight ticket voting between the candidates. One aspect of this is, whereas in the Senate and the governor's race, the incumbents are extremely well known, and the challengers are pretty well known, though still a lot of people who don't. The attorney general's race for an office that's as important as the AG is has really low name recognition. Brad Schimmel, who's been in office for 4 years, still faces 56% who don't recognize his name.
Wow.
But Josh Call, the challenger, 87% don't recognize his name. So for Call, 7% are favorable and 5% are unfavorable, but the vast majority don't know who he is when they're just presented with his name. Now, when told he's running for attorney general as a Democrat, 41% line up behind him, but clearly that's not because of deep knowledge of who he is or what his issues are. But with Schimmel at 56% who don't know, that also indicates that most of us on a day-to-day basis don't go around wondering what the attorney general did today. I apologize to the holder of that office or the future holders of the office, but that's the reality, that this is an office that until a campaign comes around, to remind us of it, to remind us what issues it handles, and to have a campaign over it. It's a low-visibility office.
It strikes me, though, that if Josh Call has a little name recognition, this is bad news for him, but it also may just simply be good news that you included this in your poll, because may be a lot of people walking around today going, who's Josh Call? Maybe I should look that up.
Exactly. And, in fact, the Call campaign sent out a fundraising letter yesterday saying we're behind in the poll, but, you know, send us money so we can compete. Smart campaigns do that. They mm-hmm. raise money off of good news and they raise money off of bad news. But I think, this is one where the challenge is going to be to break through the coverage of the governor in the Senate race to raise the visibility of the attorney general's race. But both candidates will no doubt be trying to do that.
We are talking to Charles Franklin about the Marquette University Law School poll, which came out yesterday. Shows some interesting facts, like Leah Vukmir is losing to Tammy Baldwin, and Scott Walker is also down to Tony Evers. We're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jeff from Delafield, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I'll start off by saying, as a conservationist, outdoors person, I'm a traditional Republican voter, always have been, but I'm deeply frustrated with what Governor Walker has done and the Republican legislature has done to weaken our environmental protections and just to de-emphasize the role of the DNR. And I'm very surprised that the opposition isn't using this as a bigger issue. It's just not something you hear a lot about in the media, and that surprises me.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is a good issue, too, because, as Jeff says, as a Republican voter, but someone who uses the outdoors, you know, conservationists are an element that sort of leaned Republican but might be available for a Democratic challenger to raise these issues. I've been watching the environmental issue for 7 years or even longer, and it really has not yet bubbled up to the top of what people mention. On the other hand, we asked a question, what should be your priority? Protecting the environment, even if it reduces economic growth, or to stimulate economic growth, even if it to some extent damages the environment. 59% picked the environment over the economy, just 27% the economy over the environment. So this is an issue that has a latent pool of support for the environmental issue, but unless there's a specific issue that captures the public's attention and pushes the candidates to address it, then I think it's one that remains latent rather than become a front and center issue.
This is also an interesting question we have from Tom from Burlington. Some farmers in Wisconsin are pretty angry about Trump's tariffs. Do we know if the uptick in support for Tony Evers could be related to farmers' frustrations with those national Republican policies?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't ask if you're a farmer, but it's a small segment of the population.
Right.
So I don't think we can say anything from the poll
about
farmers.
But did you ask about tariffs at all?
We definitely did. 31% think the steel and aluminum tariffs will help the economy. But 50-plus percent, I think it's about 56%, say it will hurt the economy. That's been fairly stable, but it was as low as 24% and now 31%. What's most remarkable there is 59% of Republicans now say tariffs are good for the economy. Only 20% of Republicans say tariffs are bad or will hurt the economy. And for the traditional Republican Free Trade Party, that is quite a shift in mm-hmm. opinion, though perhaps it's also notable that Democrats are suddenly the Free Trade Party, and labor unions in particular have often been very skeptical of free trade.
We are taking your calls about the Marquette University Law School poll, 800-642-1234. Jamie from Madison, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Hi.
Yeah, I guess my question was, How can voters feel confident that Scott Walker and his cohorts aren't going to, like, cheat and steal another election when I believe back when Trump and Walker were enemies, didn't Donald Trump say, oh, in Wisconsin, they like stole a couple of elections or something to that effect?
Okay, so Jamie, thank you for that.
Yeah.
You want to address that?
Yeah, well, actually, Donald Trump did say something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's how do you feel about the president's rhetoric on these things? I think the best side of this is that we do audit some of the election returns. We had a full recount in after 2016. Also, we have the types of voting machines around the state that are much less susceptible to interference. So, you know, it's hard to say definitively that our elections are completely tamper-proof. And there are other things that affect elections at the margins. What kind of information do you need to register to vote, for example? My daughter has just reached voting age, and the kind of information that we have to get together for her to register is actually more daunting than I would have ever thought it
mm-hmm.
would be.
I'm going through the same thing. I just moved here. I should note that there's no evidence that an election was stolen, but I think that what people refer to in this is, in the recall election, Scott Walker spent $30 million, and money in elections can have an effect that goes beyond issues.
Money certainly produces inequality between the candidates. Incumbents sort of naturally have big
right.
advantages there. Tammy Baldwin has a big money
and
advantage,
Brad
just
Schimble
as Scott
does,
Walker
yes.
does.
Right.
So that's sort of the nature of the beast. The best political science research says challengers who don't have any money are basically doomed. But challengers to win don't have to match the incumbent dollar for dollar. They simply have to reach enough money to run a full campaign with the advertising and the research and the travel that you need to reach voters. But they don't have to outspend the incumbent. So if there's any good news in the money game, it's that you got to have enough money to be competitive, but you don't have to outspend the incumbent.
We had another call. Lee from Madison asks about timing of polls. He wonders whether they can you can poll a day or two before the vote, or if the rules prevent that.
The rules do not prevent it. You can poll. Polling is unrestricted, unregulated in that sense. That's First Amendment, really. Mm-hmm. The right to speech also includes
the right to ask questions,
right? And so you can do that. The Marquette poll has made a deliberate decision to release our last poll the Wednesday before Election Day because we want to allow some time for the campaigns to get the last word. We don't want our poll to be the last thing voters hear. In Iowa, they make a different decision. There, the Des Moines Register poll is released on the Sunday before the election, and that makes it more newsworthy. But for our perspective, we'd rather give the candidates that extra time, even if it means our poll may be a little out of date and therefore could be susceptible to the last minute changes that we saw in 2016.
Don't vote based on the polls.
Don't vote
based
on
your own conscience. 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. We are going to come back and talk to Charles Franklin more about some of the issues that they dug into in this September edition of the Marquette University poll. And we are also taking your calls. And we will be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. In many ways, the governor's race in Wisconsin is a referendum on public schools, as Scott Walker, who cut public school funding when he became governor, squares off with Tony Evers, who is the current superintendent of public instruction. Are schools a big issue for you? What policies would you like to see implemented for public schools? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is where you can email us, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Charles Franklin, before we get into schools, which was one of the issues that you asked about on your Marquette University Law School poll. I want to talk about the ACA. We had a caller talking about that a little while ago. That's a big issue here.
Yes, it is. And, you know, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare has been an issue since it was passed in 2010. Republicans have campaigned against it for a long time. But in 2017, we saw a flip of public opinion, which had basically been a bit negative to the ACA, become about plus 10 positive towards it in national polling. It's a little tighter here in our data. It was 47 favorable, 45 unfavorable. But again, that's a reversal of the past. But the real issue now is what to do about it. In our data, 4% would keep it as it is, but a very big 55% would keep the law but make changes to improve it.
So you talked about the favorable, unfavorable rating. It sounds to me like most people want a health care law. They just don't like the ACA.
And the details about it, so 35% would either repeal and replace mm-hmm. or just repeal. So the balance of opinion is for some constructive modification of the existing law rather than the repeal and replace option. And the trouble that Republicans had in coming up with a plan that would replace it during 2017 shows the difficulty there. But throughout the history of the ACA, individual Individual provisions of the law have been popular, keeping your kids on your health care plan until they're 26, especially coverage for pre-existing conditions. And those things are now at some risk if the law is overturned in the federal courts. So there's an issue there. And with some things that proposals in Congress that would affect coverage of pre-existing conditions.
Do you think there are people out there who just simply didn't understand when Republicans would say we want to repeal Obamacare?
I think it's a really complicated set of things. It's a minority of people who get their health insurance from Obamacare. Most people still get their health coverage from their workplace,
right.
And so they've all been, whether they realize it or not, affected by the rules that now let your private employer also carry your kids to 26 or also are limited on the pre-existing conditions. You may not think you're affected with Obamacare because your employer's plan is sort of what it has been,
mm-hmm.
but it actually has been affected that way. For the people that do buy their insurance through the exchanges and get subsidies to do it, then that's a little bit more of a direct connection. Those folks may be more aware of how they're affected by it.
So in the few minutes we have left, I want to get to schools. This is a huge issue. We've got Scott Walker, who took money away from schools, against Tony Evers, who runs the school system.
Right.
Talk to me about how that's playing out with people.
Yeah, first of all, there's been a pretty big change in the balance between cutting property taxes, which is our main source of revenue for schools, and more funding for public schools. When we go back to 2012 and 13, a small plurality, about 3% more, wanted to cut property taxes rather than increase school spending. But that now has flipped pretty dramatically. In our latest data, 57% would support 57% would support more spending for schools. Just 38% put the priority on property tax cuts. So that reflects a real change. We've also seen it reflected in school referenda, which have been passing mm-hmm. at a pretty high rate. And we've seen when we ask, what's your priority, and people say schools, we follow up with, would you pay more taxes for it? That's the one issue that a substantial majority say they would be willing to pay more for.
That's very interesting. We are taking calls from Ann in Monona. Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to say, that if more people knew that Josh Call was Peg Lautenschlager's son. I know he doesn't want to use that fact, but she was a really brave, brave public servant, and I think that would really help him. My voice is weird. I think that Walker's rigidity in keeping his promise to the infamous Grover Norquist not to raise the overall tax receipt of the state, is it means worse and worse public services, and women who deal more directly with children usually know when their children and their own rights and the environment are under attack, no matter how superficially attractive a candidate might be. And I think, you know, that kind of explains the difference between the, and I don't think they need to be college educated either, you know, but the difference between women and men. And, you know, even Republicans drive, and they don't like huge mechanics bills when they land in a pothole either.
I hear you on that one. I just ran over a pretty large pothole yesterday and was thinking about that. First, let me let's talk about who Peg Lautenschlager was.
Sure. She was the state attorney general. Mm-hmm. Here was the sort of office that she held towards the end of her career, and a long time political figure in the
who
state, public
beloved.
Servant, if you will.
Who was beloved.
Partisans differ on this right. issue, but certainly among her supporters.
And Anne is clearly one of them. Well, we want to get to more callers here. Marie from Jackson, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This relates to school, which I know is a topic you just started, and specifically with regard to how the candidates are viewed relative to our dismal reading proficiency scores that just were published, were something like third in the nation. You know, Tony Evers having been head of the DPI and Scott Walker having put forth initiatives, Read the Lead. Is the public aware of that issue? And if so, which candidates are they seeing as doing anything productive about the reading deficits in our state?
Thank you very much for that, Marie.
We haven't asked specifically about that, but it's a good example of the details about what are you doing to make the schools better or worse, other than throwing money at them or other than changing the rules for teachers, for example. At least in the advertising, you would think this is all about teacher bad behavior at schools rather than about problems of reading scores or racial inequality mm-hmm. and achievement scores, which the state has very bad results in.
And Tony Evers has been running the school system, so that doesn't say a lot of great stuff about him if those numbers are going down.
I think it's really important that both of these candidates are in different ways responsible for the state school systems. And so if they have not gotten magically better over the last 8 years or so, why is that? And realistically, what should the state be doing to make any kind of progress on these issues?
So in the last less than a minute, one of the things that struck me about this poll is that you asked about John McCain. Why did you do that?
Well, because, first of all, it's just the passing of a historic figure. But also, I'm interested in the divisions within the Republican Party. And the break between the president and John McCain was, I thought, telling. And it shows up in our data that overall McCain is seen favorably by 70% of the state. But the lowest group in favorability is Republicans. Both independents and Democrats have a better view of John McCain than Republicans do. And that carries over into division within the Republican Party between supporters of McCain there and supporters of the president.
That is another topic altogether for another hour. Charles Franklin is the director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy at Marquette. He also is the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsAndVotes.com. He sits with us every couple of months to talk about his polling. Thank you very much for being here,
sir.
Thank you. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.